This episode of LedgerCast is brought to you by Nexo. Go to ledgerstatus.com/Nexo, that's N-E-X-O, to check it out. They're the only provider offering instant crypto credit lines, which lets you use digital assets as collateral to get cash in 45 plus fiat currencies. For that collateral, you can use digital tokens, and they just introduced PAXG as one of the offerings, which is a physically backed digital gold token. That's pretty cool. We'll talk more about that in the middle of the show. Go to ledgerstatus.com/Nexo to check it out. Thanks so much to Nexo for being a Ledger Status partner. Hello and welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard. I'm here with Josh Olswich. Hey, Josh.
Hey, Brian. Just sitting here near the end of the world, you know?
Yeah, we were just talking about the unbanked. You said there are millions of people that have income but really don't have like proper banking, huh?
Yeah, I'm trying to find an actual number from recent statistics. So it looks like, I don't know what year this is though, but it looks like it's 28 million unbanked.
Ooh, that's 10%.
45 million underbanked. Wow. And about 10 million unregistered immigrants.
Wow. So this relief package, disaster relief package, the CARES Act, people in the United States could get up to $1,200 per single adult and $500 up to two kids, I believe. So all in all, could get upwards a couple married filing jointly with two kids could get $3,400 if they're making $150,000 or less cumulatively. However, unless you have a bank on the IRS system, which to my knowledge, you either have to like be on file to pay quarterlies or be like a corporation or be on their system for some kind of payment or repayment programs in order to really have a bank on file. I don't really know why you'd have a bank on file otherwise.
Well, don't you automatically, like when I used to get returns back, what's the term? I can't, I'm blanking, but
yeah, like your tax return.
Yeah. When you get that back, it usually a direct deposit, but I don't know if that is because of the service you're using.
I don't remember. It's been so long since I've had a tax refund that I have no knowledge of it in that sense. But business owners often will have their banks attached for the purposes of paying quarterly taxes on a federal account. But a lot of people do not have their bank attached, is the point. And I've seen different things. Like the money's supposed to go out in a few weeks, but apparently if you don't have your bank attached, it could take upwards of 4 months for people to get checks. So that's not good for immediate relief for people that need the income to basically have no access to these funds.
I'm just looking at the states with the most underbanked Americans, and it's highly concentrated in the South as far as...
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
So your neck of the woods, Louisiana, Alabama, is Oklahoma,
it, does it show
Tennessee?
A geographic distribution? So I imagine it's a lot of rural areas.
Yeah, it could be. I'm not really sure. I mean, that's not exactly super detailed, but.
Yeah. Either way, that's, I don't know. All in all, there were some good and bad parts about that bill. This isn't a political podcast, but. we can speculate about what are people going to do when they get a couple thousand dollars in their bank account.
They're not going to buy crypto, I'll tell you that much.
You don't think so?
No, these people don't have a job. They're going to buy food. They're going to buy necessities. I love the argument of it encourages people not to work. Like, give me a break.
Yeah,
nobody can work right now anyway. Like, what do you? I just don't understand.
Well, the unemployment filings were massive, and apparently it was just the tip of the iceberg because it was just the people who filed in time, people actually finding out that they were laid off and in the process of figuring out how do you take the next steps and all that could take weeks. I think it was the California governor or somebody was talking about how they anticipated a massive surge in addition to what they already got.
Well, a bunch of websites were down. People trying to access state by
state. People were trying to track like logged in users on those different state websites.
I calculated the unemployment rate percentage wise, just based on the numbers, was at 5.7. But I think that's obviously going to go up with over how many people do you think is going to be unemployed? 10 million? I was looking at the numbers. I never actually looked at the hard numbers, but apparently 164 million are the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
So if
you have 3 million new filings.
Yeah, but it comes out to 5.7 just on the numbers we have. So yeah, it's going to be a mess, man.
Yeah.
And so yeah.
Honestly, there's going to be a lot of people file too that were maybe they didn't file yet, but they were qualified. But now if there's an extra $600 a month being applied to it, you'll get an increase from that of people that are underemployed or between jobs and, just various things, various reasons why it will go up in addition to the natural immediate job loss justifications. And I think if you get furloughed, you can file for unemployment as well. And a lot of people small businesses that have been forced to shut down by their local governments had to do that. You can unfurlough them and you keep all their stuff on file. You can get back to normal quickly, but they still qualify for unemployment, I believe, if they're furloughed. So
do you think the markets bounced this week because all the bad stuff was already priced in?
I think some of the bad stuff was priced in. I think there was some hopium in the air about a snapback. And I think we were so massively oversold that a bounce back made sense. The question for me is not whether a bounce back was the right thing, because it was, in my opinion, past due for a mean reversion of some sort, even if it's minimal. What's interesting to me is that the S&P 500 at least came back and basically tapped the 200-week moving average. So we're on the underside of what defines a real secular bear market that on a long-term trend-following strategy like that. So I think, the question is, do we melt right back off of it quickly, or do we dink around for a little bit before it goes back down? Or is it a new bull market, as the Wall Street Journal said, which they did say it from a technical basis because it was, 20% off the bottoms, whatever. But it obviously it's not a real bull market. But that got a lot of play in the Twitterverse, didn't it?
Yeah, it was probably the worst clickbait I've seen in a while. It's we've got these rules and in a vacuum, it's a bull market. Well, that's not reality, clearly. I'm just looking at the VIX. I think the only reason to pay attention to legacy markets, other than obvious day-to-day life, is how they connect to crypto, at least lately. So the S&P correlation over the past 30 days has been coming off a little bit, decreasing, which is good. I think crypto is basically sideways the past couple of days. Well, legacy markets are bouncing all over the place. I mean, oil is still dumping, but just looking at the VIX is definitely down from the highs, but it's going to need to keep coming down for crypto to have a chance, I think.
Yeah. So far, what you talked about with the VIX peaks of 2015 and, the other recent ones since Bitcoin has existed, that's playing out pretty well, at least with, it being a bottom for the sell-off for Bitcoin. This was also true of gold, that the 2008 gold bottom, because it retraced about 34% to 35% in 08, even after a sharp uptick, and then it sold off. And that peak or that trough in gold was also related to the peak in the VIX in 08 on a weekly basis. So it could be that Bitcoin is following a similar inverse VIX correlation that gold did. In terms of the VIX itself, interesting. It retraced back up all the way to 65, but it was as low as 36 on the week.
Bullish. Bull market.
Yeah.
The crypto markets to me feel like all the big boys left. Anybody trading with size left. They got blown out or apathetic or scared, risk off. A combination of all those things.
And yeah, certainly some of the people that were market making just probably concentrated their efforts, decided it wasn't worth it.
Yeah. So right now it's just like chill, you know, just chill. There's no BARTs. There's no nothing. It's just sideways. Yeah. It's pretty funny when like when the market makers are gone, how the charts look, you know, versus these like massive derivative open interest everywhere. Even for ETH, I mean, man, ETH really got blown out to the downside.
Yeah. Somebody posted a chart. I don't remember if we talked about it last week. I think I might have mentioned it on somewhere. But the effect of a $10 million order on a derivatives exchange has created, now it's creating like 10 times the slippage that it did before we dropped 50%.
Yeah, so, it's on. You can see it on Skew. The bid offer spread's coming down, but it's definitely above where it was before the 12th of March.
Yeah. To wrap up that VIX point, it took 10 weeks above 50 before the VIX finally kind of broke down in early 2009. So we're really in the legacy market.
The VIX. So that's around Easter, right? It's got to be.
Yeah, Trump says we go back to work on Easter, which sounds terrifyingly dangerous. But nevertheless, this is only our third week with a close above 50. And yeah, so it could indicate at a minimum we have a high volatility environment in the legacy markets for another couple of months and probably longer than that. So it's not like a huge melt off, you know, off you go. VIX to zero.
I mean, I have had two family friends reach out to me and ask, like, is now a good time to buy stocks? So I don't know if that's bullish or bearish, but
that makes me nervous too, because it seems like, you know, people have a lot of confidence in the market. So there was some fear from a early capitulation standpoint, but, you know, it's not like people have lost faith fully in the markets, right? They just see it as a dip worth buying. And to me, it seems like if we're going to have a proper recessionary bear market, then people will eventually just lose faith in the market or just stop looking at it, you know, things like that. They won't see it as an opportune time to buy the dip. And of course, that's what it was in December 2018, but the market fundamentals were different. Earnings were high. Unemployment was low, yada, yada.
If you look at unemployment, though, it looks like a B-band breakout to the upside. Like how you get this like massive squeeze, it just like gets tighter and tighter and tighter and then just explodes.
I mean, obviously we had extenuating circumstances here, but
yeah,
it's stunning. And the knock-on effects in the economy are going to be long-lasting. One more thing to talk about as we ease our way into crypto here. Hope everybody
quarantine snacks. You're going to say quarantine snacks, right?
You know, I was going to say quarantine snacks. specifically, I was going to talk about the value of the dollars that buy quarantine snacks.
Okay.
The dollar in response to infinity QE from the Fed peaked at about 103 and had just an incredible bearish engulfing candle on the Dixie. DXY, all the way back to about 98.50.
Oh, wow. I haven't looked at that lately.
I've been looking at it because I tried to get in, I think, around 100. Anyway, so I'm long dollar, and I've been averaging in a little bit every day, and now I'm quite long the dollar. So if it has another week like that, then I'm going to lose some money on that trade.
That looks insane. But that's like a currency. That's like the world reserve currency, you know?
Yeah, at least the basket. So I think there's still some liquidity issues in the market, which was why I went for the long dollar trade. Other people have done a better job expressing that trade than I have. But it certainly met a match with the Fed print and infinite QE and yada, yada. You know, the Fed's motivated to keep this dollar down. The question is whether they can or not. So that's a really interesting to continue to watch, is the dollar basket, the DXY, and then also the dollar versus various other country other countries' currencies, because the Fed is really needs to keep this low for a variety of reasons. But the dollar milkshake theory people and all that, they would give you a lot of reasons why that's going to be difficult to do.
Yeah, USD CAD exploded this week too, all these petro currencies. I mean, it's, I'm not rooting for doom, but it's bullish for crypto that all this stuff is like exploding, you know?
Yeah, just in general, there's mayhem across those markets. And I think, I do think it's, you know, creating interest in Bitcoin. I had somebody in a non-crypto, you know, like a work chat today. They were already interested in Bitcoin, but they were saying today, like, hey, so given all this stuff, what do y'all think this means for Bitcoin? And they were like, not to, you know, open a hornet's nest here, but they were just curious. And I thought it was interesting because he's, you know, a layman that generally is already had some crypto interest, but they made the point, like, isn't this what crypto's for? And I think if that mainstream narrative starts to click, obviously you can see it as a delay, but it is a bullish narrative for Bitcoin, not necessarily for good for the world, but in the in that landscape of, you know, buying like people that are seeking safety in their buying power. And if they see Bitcoin as a way to maintain that buying power while they watch their currency go to crap.
Yeah, I mean, the disinflationary march for BTC will continue into halving, unabated, is seemingly unaware of what's going around in the world at 1.8%. It's projected for May 9th to the 14th now after the massive difficulty adjustment we had a few days ago.
So it's moving up. How big was the difficulty adjustment?
15.95% negative. Wow. Second highest negative drop ever.
Can I mine Bitcoin on my laptop yet?
You can try. It's not, it won't be profitable.
What about a GPU?
No, you still won't be profitable.
Yeah, no, just messing around. That would be quite a that would be quite the capitulation signal, though, wouldn't it? If it's all of a sudden mining got so bad that you could mine it on a GPU.
I mean, everybody's leveraged on everything, and that includes miners. So miners were leveraged to the hilt going into this drop, and you know they basically got margin called to the extent that they're no longer profitable by a wide margin. At least some of these people. Depending on electricity costs, depending on miners, like, you know, you see all these calculations for break even and pre and post halving, but it's so complex. There are so many variables that go into that for each miner. Like, you can't just say this is like the break even price for everybody, because it's just, it's not how it works.
Yeah. And some countries are providing like emergency rate power discounts, you know, like it just got cheaper to mine. I think it was Canada that did a really significant cut on their off-peak power usage, to where a Canadian miner in certain areas, wherever that type of cut occurred, like it, things look a lot better for them.
Yeah, so if electricity is free, then it just depends on what kind of miners you have from an efficiency standpoint. But you know, I guess your break even is just the cost of the miner and overhead, right? At that point, there's no like continuous electricity cost. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, post-halving. That's why I just want to get it over with already. How many people are going to get washed out post-halving if we're still at 6K or we go lower? What's that bloodbath going to be like?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we don't have to find out. Maybe it pumps. Maybe we bottomed pre-halving, and this is why. This is Bitcoin's moment, you know?
I saw some interesting conspiracy theories around miners or whales purposely washing out all the other, you know, high leverage miners who couldn't afford to mine. So basically they were accumulating, 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 and then leading up to a couple of weeks from March 12th, they started dumping, and then they dumped all at once, washed away all these derivative people, they may have even been short while they're doing it. So they're making money while making money.
So what you're saying is that some Bitcoin miners did the exact same thing that Russia and Saudi Arabia did for the oil market.
It's possible. I think the evidence is loose at best, just because it's extremely hard to track this stuff with certainty.
But there are some miners with enough Bitcoin to where, you know, they know they can have an effect on the price as long as they prepare. Like, they're obviously going to have incredibly bad slippage and things like that. That's the point. But if they ease their way into a leveraged short or something, then they can be prepared to make up for the slippage.
Right. They're not, they're knowing very well what they're doing, much like 2018. You could argue that that drop was miner led to some degree.
The one off of 6.4 or whatever.
6.5. Yeah. So the same thing may have happened on this drop, you know, and that just cascades into derivatives, into capitulation everywhere on everything, you know.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting theory. I just don't think I can't prove it. I don't think anybody can prove it, but essentially,
if you were in that position, though, and you don't care about human beings or anything else, and you're just seeking to wash out your competition as best as possible, it makes logical sense. So therefore, why wouldn't you assume that someone's thinking about it that way, especially when there are enough centralized, powerful players to be able to pull it off?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely possible. I just don't know. It's just like a 51% attack. You know, if somebody has enough money, it's possible. Doing what I'm describing to price is much easier than a 51% attack.
Yeah, I was about to say it's easier than a 51% attack, and you're much more motivated to go about an attack this way, because a 51% attack also just ruins the asset in general, whereas this is a price manipulation that, you know, eventually Bitcoin recovers from, and you're prepared both going in and on the opposite side, probably prepared to cover your shorts and buy and all those things. So they could have been the selling pressure, all the retail mayhem was in the middle, and then they were the buying support on the other side of it.
Right.
What is there to lose unless it doesn't work the way you anticipate, which there has to be a bigger whale in the room to push you around in order mm-hmm. for it to not work.
Yeah, I mean, if they did do that, they picked the perfect time to do it. So.
Yeah.
And so, hey, it's possible.
Yeah, it's possible. I like this conspiracy theory. I'm happy to have it here on ledgerstatus.com on the Ledger Cast. Unsubstantiated mining conspiracy theories. Go ahead and at us with your comments or proof, or hit us up in our DMs with some substantiation. We'd break that story.
I tried looking into it yesterday, and there's some loose stuff. Like ByteTree has some information as far as miners generation versus first spend. So yeah, you can see miner spend increase pretty dramatically on the 8th compared to what they were mining. But like, other than that, I mean,
yeah. All right. So here's what I want to ask you. Is the bottom in on this version of a Bitcoin bear market? Will we go below 3,600?
I mean, I'd love to see Adam Eve, just because it's easy to trade. So like, let's say we fail at 7 or whatever we are right now, 6.8. The logical next step would be an Adam and Eve attempt.
Where is your Eve? Adam and Eve is a double bottom with a lower or a higher low.
For somewhere around 5K. So like, that's a possibility. There's this rising wedge possibility that I don't really think holds water anymore, just because we're just sideways, you know? Like, I don't know. If I draw it out.
What do you think about the current argument for an Adam and Eve existing now on the 4 hour or so?
A bearish Adam and Eve?
Bullish. Where we've been making the handle since March 24th.
March 24th. I don't see it. I see, if we get back down to 5.7... slowly, then we're setting up for an inverted Adam and Eve on the 4 hour. I don't know. There's a lot of there's a lot of possibles if we don't break the current local highs.
I'll tell you one thing. We're recording again on a Friday like we do. And I feel like by Monday, the price will be a lot different than it is right now.
100% agree. I mean, on ETH, ETH actually looks more flat than BTC from a ascending triangle perspective. You could argue that pretty strongly here.
Yeah, you gave an argument, a bullish argument for an edge-to-edge trade in Ethereum, didn't you?
Yeah, so that's still live, the four-hour BTC.
Quite consolidated and looks... It's going to move. It does. I don't love the look versus the dollar personally. It looks like a bearish pennant or something, but it's just condensing really tightly. I say that, and yet I have Ethereum exposure on the spot BTC pair. I don't remember what price I got in at, but 0.020 something, somewhere down here, because it's just in the last couple of days.
The 4-hour cloud flipped 100% bullish a few hours ago for the first time since February 15th. So we are definitely more bullish than we have been in a while, in over a month.
On the USD pair?
On the USD pair for BTC. So for ETH, I guess my point is like I can't argue for a rising wedge at all on ETH. Still looks good for a 25% move to 170 to me. I don't know.
Yeah.
Call me crazy, Brian, but
I don't like the rising wedge arguments on any of these big cap USD pairs. For the most part, I don't love the looks I see from alts, but at the same time, the risk reward is good because I feel like the altcoins that I've seen are preparing for a pretty good size move, and the Bitcoin dominance chart, I know some people don't like to look at it, but you know, I hate to tell you, it tapped directly into the 200-day moving average and came off of it a little bit. They're around 67.9, something like that. So I think if alts are going to move, they have an opportunity to do so here. Even though like the charts themselves, I'm not in love with. Do you have any thoughts about that though?
Yeah, I mean, it's like we talked about last week. It's hard to be against your macro thesis. So if we're bearish on just the basic stuff like 200, it's hard to think we're going to have some like massive bull rally here, you know. But at the same time, all this stuff to me is just mean reversion type, you know, rubber band back to where we came from, kind of, you know.
You mean back to the norm, like 6 to 7K is the norm, or we need a rubber band, we need a mean revert back to retest the lows that we experienced?
No, mean revert back up. So
yeah,
I feel 8.2, you know.
Yeah, it was funny to me, you know. I was talking about this with somebody, how like a price can matter for so long. Let's use 6,500, 6,400 in 2018. The volume profile around there was so gigantic that we broke down from it. And then when we came back, we were like, this is a rock solid level that matters. And it didn't matter at all because everyone anticipated it mattering. So we drove right through it. Like, because once it pushed, it just went and went and went. Well, since then, it's mattered a lot. You know, we've touched it three different times on Wix as support. When we lost it in a huge way. And now here we are, like back in that same kind of volume node. And it's interesting to me how some of these prices, like they are important, even though they're not always respected.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to like the world exploding. You know, if the world didn't explode, 6.4 probably would have held on the way down. But
yeah, but the world exploded, you know. and our derivatives exchanges also exploded, like as a consequence of that. But now we recover back to this, and it's like there's nothing to say we can't now consolidate for a long time. Like I still, you know, if you're an options trader, you'd be looking here to like sell a strangle or sell a straddle or a butterfly or, you know, like something that's going to collect premium because basically, you could believe like, hey, I like this anything inside 5 and 7K type of range, and I'm willing to collect premium from people expecting some gigantic move. Because when I look at a 3-day weekly chart, something like that, I look at a chart where I could see us dinking around in the same range that we did for 2018 for 3 months or more. So while I say we are due for a move by Monday, I don't mean like a $3,000 move. I mean like a inside $1,000 move.
Yeah. Yeah. I think 8.82 is a bit absurd, admittedly. You know, 7.8 though sounds possible.
Yeah.
So that's a $1,000 move.
Yeah.
What percentage is that? 18-15%, something like that. That's not unreasonable here. I don't know. I saw a lot of bearish people, especially going into the jobs numbers. People are assuming that the unemployment numbers were going to be massive, which they were, and that the market, the legacy market, was going to just die off, which it didn't.
Because everybody expected it to be massive. Because a market is not responsive, it's predictive. And if the market is smart enough to say, hey, this unemployment number is going to be gigantic, the market is clever enough to price that in before Retail Joe, who says, I'm buying puts, like, the, you know, right when the number comes out.
So I guess my point is, I saw a lot of bearish people on Twitter because of the jobs numbers, when in actuality, like, it didn't, there was no bearish follow through, you know, a couple days ago now, but
yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. I'm long ETH, I'm long VTC. I'm still holding my alt fund unchanged from a few weeks ago. So I don't know. Like, what's doom? Zero? You know, what's the downside here? Honestly, like 1,000, 3,000? What's the upside here? I don't know. Infinity? Like.
Nexo offers instant crypto credit lines, which let you use digital assets as collateral and get cash in 45 fiat currencies and stablecoins in return. You know, one of the brand new collateral items that they just enabled was PAXG, and PAXG is a digital representation of physical gold on the blockchain, which is a really awesome way to set it up, because now you can use a gold-backed stablecoin as your collateral and borrow against it. If you do secure a loan with Nexo, you deposit that collateral, like we said, and then if you fail to repay it, then you would give up that collateral. Nexo launched in 2018, and since then, they've established itself as the world's leading crypto lending service. They've processed more than $1.5 billion for more than 550,000 users on their platform. The company has $100 million in insurance on all custodial assets provided by the leading audited custodian, BitGo. Don't worry, your assets are safe when you're using Nexo. Go to ledgerstatus.com/earn if you would like to lend on Nexo, and go to ledgerstatus.com/borrow if you would like to borrow on Nexo. Thanks to Nexo for being a LedgerCast partner. I know. That's the argument that strikes with me, is that there's fixed risk downside. Bitcoin goes to zero depending on the percentage of your entire net worth or portfolio that Bitcoin is. That could sound disastrous, but for a lot of people, they look at it like, okay, maybe I have 5% in Bitcoin or less. If it goes to zero, that's fine. But I'm buying some of this stuff because this is what this thing's made for, is this type of infinity QE. Fiat currencies are apparently endlessly printable. In terms of specifics, using my same narrative that I like to use as much as I can, we recaptured the 20-week or the 200-week moving average in Bitcoin after a massive spike under it. To me, it was a signal that, like, it was just an important place to hold on to, the, you know, the mid 5Ks. And now we've had a positive week off of it. So if we go down, I agree with you, maybe we could hit 5K. I still think we'd save the 200 week on any kind of wick. So like 5,700 or so, 55 to 57 would be the lowest kind of weekly close I would want to see. But in actuality, from like a, if I'm looking for exposure in this market, that's where I'm telling people, just buy the bottom of that range. And it's the same, it's the bottom of that range is the same bottom of the range that we had in 2018. So like, I feel like we're just going back to jail right now. Like, I feel like Bitcoin is about to do a bunch of nothing for a couple of months while the rest of the world tries to figure itself out. And we're going to coil for our moon mission as volatility comes down in the legacy market, and this idea of inflation being a thing and gold catching a bid and Bitcoin being like the high beta little brother of gold is the way that if you make me map something out, that's my theory, right?
Yeah, I mean, being short volatility all over the place right now, I think that's reasonable.
Reasonable as long as you don't get blown out first.
Well, sure.
Because volatility could spike up higher than we anticipated. But I feel like we hit some pretty serious levels of fear across.
I mean, who's here to buy up the market, though? Like, Joe Public is here, but, you know, market maker whale is gone.
Some of the market makers are gone. Some people, the ones that don't blow up, they just like, they have stuff in their algorithms that say like, all right, widen out. You know, like if we're going to play in this market, somebody's going to have to chase it, and we're going to have a nice wide gap here in the middle that we play in. And we're going to do it with less size because we're going to be here when this is all said and done. There's always smart money. Like, there's general contraction, like money that leaves the system in a in a downturn. But there's still money. It just goes somewhere else for a while. There's always a move. There's always a play. And I think eventually, and the question to me is whether Bitcoin will follow this narrative. But I'm convicted in terms of the move for gold is up. And I think there is a strong argument for Bitcoin being what Bitcoin's supposed to be. Like, that's why I'm here, right?
Yeah, I agree.
And I think it's got a shot. So, like, you know, I just don't want to lose all my money during some nitpicky downturn stuff because I want to be long when it matters. And I think it's going to matter.
I agree. I'm just looking at the weekly ETH. There was technically a bullish divergence on that drop for ETH. And I was just thinking, what would I really want to see to be sure that there's a bottom, some sort of bullish divergence on the weekly, even for Bitcoin, which would mean a lower low. And wait, this isn't bullish divergence. I always get these screwed up. But anyway, for BTC and ETH, you get a lower low in price and a higher low in RSI. Yeah, no, that is bullish. Just looking at this chart, thinking like, this is a bullish divergence, right? Lower low in price, higher low in RSI.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So like ETH already technically has a bullish divergence. So I can't see it getting another one. Yeah. So the lower low drop will probably break RSI on the weekly below 30. That'd be my guess. There's a ton of maker liquidations at 70. I mean, if ETH lingers below 100, it's going to get real ugly. Real ugly.
Yeah, that is an incredible weekly chart on the Ethereum dollar. I'm not as bullish. I say that the risk reward is there on altcoins, but it doesn't make me as bullish altcoins because I think we're in a macro environment. Like, this is not a super risk on long blockchain environment.
I agree with you completely, but at the same time, like, the correlations are 95%+ on virtually everything, you know, the high cap stuff.
Yeah, like, it doesn't mean these fundamental narratives apply well.
Right, like, do I think Ethereum is the solution for, you know, inflationary whatever Weimar Republic type stuff? No, I don't. I think Bitcoin would be much better than that, but that doesn't mean that they both can't move. Right.
I think that's a signal to me that Bitcoin dominance could really spike up, and, you know, this potential that we see for alts could be short lived, or the move for alts having a rotation might not last very long, something like that. Like, and we're seeing that. We're seeing any opportunity for these altcoins has really not lasted that long. You know, maybe a few weeks here and there, but not like a big sustained buy it all for months type of thing. Seems like people are more and more not trusting altcoins for that type of scenario. And it might take a secular bull market and legacy and this, and you know, another like risk on behavior. It could be years before that happens again.
Yeah, and you've said this before, but alts are just like a leveraged risk on thing.
Yeah.
Not necessarily some like paradigm shift, you know.
So that's my hesitancy.
Deep down, people know that who aren't like brainwashed by the quote unquote community, but people still want their bags to go up, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm holding three spot altcoins right now, but I can get rid of them whenever I want. I'm willing to do that, and I will do that if the risk reward goes away. I see opportunity. I totally see it on some of these altcoin relative to BTC charts. But to me, Bitcoin needs to continue to range, you know, like not do too much. And it needs to be a calmer period for legacy markets or like kind of continue the move up mean reversion. There's a lot of conditionals for this altcoin scenario playing. But when I look at the Bitcoin scenario, is like there's so much great fundamental alignment that could occur here that even if it goes down, it's like I don't see a great route for why I want to be out of Bitcoin.
Yeah, I agree. That's why we're here. Now's your time to shine, baby. I think Dan Moorhead probably said it best. I've been like reading all everyone's hot take on, you know, the end of the world. He said something like it was born in 08 for something exactly like this. I'm going to butcher it. Let me just find it.
That's fine.
But Dan Moorhead is the head of Pantera, one of the most profitable crypto hedge funds in the history of crypto hedge funds. Bitcoin was born in a financial crisis. It will come to age in this one.
Ooh.
I got the chills, ooh, Brian.
That's good.
I got the
that's
chills. Good. Yeah. So, I mean, I couldn't. Obviously, he has a vested interest in crypto, you know, doing well, but don't we all?
Yeah. I mean, maybe altcoins like in blockchain will find a lift out of all this in some capacity. Obviously, there's always a few winners. I just think on the whole, we'll continue to see things not be overly impressive. We'll continue to see things, you know, like a move up will last a little while. It's hard to get too interested in stuff with low liquidity, make that's hard to get in or out, and like buy some big fundamental narrative for an altcoin. The one realm where I think there might be some interest is if there's this dollar shortage, if people are looking for yield. You know, we're seeing treasury yields. The 3-month U.S. bond went to negative rates this week, and you can get 8% yield in DeFi. You know, so like.
So, it's true.
Some people might want to go that route. Our own show sponsor, Nexo, has 8% yield, and they even have it. I think there you can have gold as collateral now through like Pax G. So like there are some people that may, you know, maybe you can create narratives for an altcoin like the Ethereum landscape. If round two for DeFi, if Ethereum doesn't kill itself and Maker doesn't go away, you know, like there's a lot of risks in some of that, but this ability to get yield could draw some more risk on investors that are seeking that yield, could draw them into the ecosystem.
I listened to a podcast by the guys at Epicenter last night with Joe Lubin. And one thing he said in that whole interview was like really struck me. He was talking about like, I forget what they were talking about exactly. Something about price, but he was like, people can trade tokens on mainnet, but the enterprise side is going really well. So to me, that's like just being tone deaf as to how Ethereum got to where it was as far as the ICO stuff and being a security, not being a security. But
I don't even know
it's
what
like
that,
I got my money.
I don't even know what that means. The tokens and enterprise. What does he mean by that?
The way I read that is like I couldn't give a crap about what happens to Ethereum as long as the enterprise side is working and like I can make my money. That's how
I. So like he's making money consulting blockchain crap.
Right. So then he went on and like listed all the stuff that the blockchain, you know, blockchain, Bitcoin is blockchain, you know, whatever the blockchain narrative is. So that was super interesting. But so then I looked at like the Ethereum chain last night, like, you know, what's going on with Ethereum? And if you look at ERC-20 USDT lately, it's just skyrocketing as far as the issuance is concerned. Then if you look at the gas costs for all these contracts, all these tokens, Ethereum USDT by a wide margin is absorbing all these costs on transaction fees. So eventually I can see a time where they either have to kick Ethereum or kick USDT off of Ethereum because it's just going to collapse the chain, which is, it's going
to
happen. Like,
or they have to scale it.
Right. They either have to scale it, they have to kick it off, or they have to keep increasing the gas limit. You know, they have to do something because it's going to...
This is in support of what we're talking about, though, right? People don't want their... They don't want negative yield on their bank accounts, and they don't want it in their own currencies. And the easiest way to get it off of all of that is to pull it into the crypto ecosystem and put it in tethers.
Yeah. But to me, if I'm also thinking about this like Omni versus Ethereum narrative, where it's like Ethereum is just Omni 2.0 at this point. You can sell, you can send.
The tether's good, Ethereum's bad.
Yeah, you can send Tether quicker and cheaper at the moment until everything breaks down. But I don't know. Like the way it's headed for Ethereum and Tether, they're going to need to do something. So hopefully ETH 2.0 figures it out by then. But, right now, it's all Tether transactions.
There's 6 billion tethers out there now.
Yeah, and there's no sign of stopping either.
Yeah, I mean 6 billion is not nothing. that's a pretty good chunk of change.
Yeah, that's a massive chunk of change.
And that's just Tether. There's the Binance, whatever theirs is called, BUSD, it's doing pretty well. Like there's several that are. Of these stable coins that are doing all right. There seems to be more support potentially for like, you know, stable coins of stable coins, like some risk reduction efforts there. So yeah, I don't know what to make of that.
Yeah. And even USDC is at 700 million. So I guess my point is, you know, back to Ethereum, you know, thoughts about the future for Ethereum in this current environment. I'm not confident.
Yeah, so you're not confident in the gas token having significant value, but the ecosystem that can be built on top of it, USDT is the killer crypto app.
Well, it's like Ripple. It's like Ripple's great for sending transactions. I wouldn't hold anything in Ripple.
Right.
Right? Like the same could be argued for ETH. Like you can send it quickly and it's cheap. Okay.
Yeah.
Same thing could be argued with Litecoin. You know, if that happens on occasion. If the Bitcoin network is full,
there used to be
just
these,
send it on Litecoin.
There used to be these arguments about how to calculate the value of altcoins. And this was like the throughput argument was one of those fundamental arguments for the value. And I can't remember who made those arguments or the specifics. Feels like it's been forever since there was like these fundamental altcoin crypto narratives.
Well, you make that argument if you have a feeless, somewhat centralized chain because it's incredibly fast and it's free, you know, like EOS, for example, where it's not exactly decentralized, but it's fast, you know.
You're saying there's an argument for value in those or no?
No, I'm saying you're trying to argue that there's a value in those if you're, you know, those people. Otherwise, it's like... What's the
Can
point?
You make an argument for one being valuable if it actually is decentralized? Like if it is decentralized, if it is scalable and it does provide the service, is there an argument for it then being valuable?
Well, the problem is if you're scalable, it's hard to be also decentralized because you're creating so much node space, like block size stuff. You know, like all these transactions on ETH, the blocks the node requirement, you know, gigabytes, whatever it is now, terabytes, that just continuously pushes people out of the node space, you know? So you're just increasing centralization.
How does Ethereum 2.0 address this whole concept of, like, it's not a layer 2 setup, is it?
No, but they say, well, everybody can, with 32 ETH, can just stake on the network, right? Like, that's their central or decentralization argument. But then it's the same thing with Tezos. It's like, okay, everybody can stake, but they're doing it on exchanges. They're not necessarily doing it.
But how does staking increase the scalability?
I don't know. That's a specific question that I don't know enough about to answer correctly. But
either way, we maintain skepticism of fundamental value for network tokens that are basically gas.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, you know, Ethereum is not a store of value, clearly, right?
Yeah.
Neither is any of this other stuff.
I should qualify. I think that maybe they have value, but like commodity value. You know,
sure. So,
oil,
but again, back
oil,
to the,
we've talked about this exact comparison of like Ethereum to oil, and oil ranges because there's production of oil, you know, like, there's their shortages and there's too high of supplies at times. There's all these issues that cause the price of oil to change, but it's not like you want to stick your money in oil and keep it there for 30 years. That has not proven to be very good.
Sure. So, but back to my thoughts about what Lubin is saying, to me, I'm reading that as he could care less what the token is worth, which is fine, but his focus is just the blockchain side, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, he got his money, so whatever.
Yeah, he took some off the table, and now he's building with the use case of Ethereum blockchain stuff, but there's no narrative there. There's no store of value narrative. He's building equity in companies.
Right. And I think, like we're discussing, like his narrative is there's value because it's being used, right? But the retort to that is, well, look at Omni. Omni was massively important for Tether, worth nothing, you know? So like, which is it, right? I don't know. But gives me pause, fear, and trepidation at holding Ethereum long term compared to something else, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. Just an interesting, you know, if you're part of either community, just an interesting thought experiment, I guess.
Yeah, you can be excited about something like DeFi and still have that concern.
Yeah, I think DeFi is cool. I think it's got a lot of problems and isn't secure. But doesn't mean it's not, you know, going to disappear. It's going to be here for a long time. I'm not throwing millions of dollars in DeFi, that's for sure. But
yeah,
it's super cool.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, Bitcoin is at 6666. Did you predict? You always love these numbers. So my question is, did you use that in your analysis for Bitcoin?
No, I don't think so. The big level I'm looking at. Excuse me, got a bit of a corona. Uh-oh. No. 6.5, I think, is the big level as far as the horizontal. Like, if we're below 6.5 in the near term, then I think we just break down to like 6. But otherwise, I think we're good for 8, 7, 8, something like that.
Yeah, my next magic yellow box goes from like 73 to 77. On the daily 200 is all the way up at 83.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my really have fun spike up. That's kind of a take some that's kind of my take some off the table and let it chill out for a little while type of level.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
And then the 200 week at 55 or so is where I say I want exposure. So there's a long way. There's a path there. Like we've talked about, there's tradable ranges, but it doesn't mean like we're going to go to moon or doom tomorrow. I think people talking about revisiting or making lower lows is a little extreme at the moment. It's hard for me to picture the scenario where a derivatives market will blow out 2 weeks after it just did the exact same, you know, like I just don't see that. And the price won't go down by that much without a absolute over leveraged derivatives blowout. So take that, lower low people. Get out of here. Get out of here with your nonsense.
Get out of here with your with your gobbledygook. Bitcoin usually likes its 100-day consolidation periods, 100 to 130 days, something like that, which basically brings us into July.
Right? So we're going to have to find some new stuff to talk about on all these episodes because it's not going to be priced for a little while.
It's possible.
All right.
Which is it's a good thing after a move like this, after halving. That's what I want to see. Slow and steady accumulation, just like the last halving.
Yep. I'm in for that. What are you writing about right now, Josh?
So last podcast, I was looking at the wrong dates, and I gave you the schedule for this week. So this week, it's Grin, Doge, and ETH. Last week, it was Stellar, Ripple, and Monero. Big thing with Stellar is Jed McCaleb got a, you know, he's the new whale on Stellar. He's good, on Ripple. Sorry,
he's the big seller.
He's the big Ripple seller. He's got 5% of the total supply of Ripple. And so if I were him, I'd just dump that shit to zero, right?
Are people tracking his addresses? Does he have known addresses or anything?
Yeah. I mean, if you pull up the Bitstamp volume for XRP USD. It's just been like all-time high levels. McCaleb, it's been insane.
Cashing out so he can buy stocks.
Maybe. I don't know. So yeah, that's Ripple. Monero, actually, the transactions per day is way up. That could be good because mining is way up. I'm not really sure. And then Stellar. But Ripple BTC looks like it's going to go super low.
Zero.
Pull up that chart. Pull up that XRP BTC chart. It looks like it's headed to like 1500 sats, something like that.
It's been so long since I've looked at some of these. It's probably a bottom thing sign, to be honest, for some of these altcoins. It's like I just forgot they existed. XRP's up 4.7% today. So Jed has not taken his daily.
His pound of flesh.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, quite. I mean, this thing, I mean, you could look at it as if it's been basing since August 19th or August 2019, but if it breaks down, the measured move is negative yield on Ripple on the way. But if it gets above 3K, if it gets above 3K, it could go slam up there into 4K. So, I mean, I guess that's tradable, but it's dangerous.
This is what I said in the article. I said, you know, the 200's at 3K, the cloud level's at 3K. Like you're saying, 3K is clearly the upside resistance level, but it's building this descending triangle. It's below the 200, below the cloud right now. If it breaks the lows, it's going to 1,000, 1,500 sats, something like that.
Yeah, the move.
It's going to be, and you know, Jed could be the one that takes it there. So that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, the Binance weekly close low back in 2017, which was the bull market capitulation before it, like, whatever, 10x'd. So, you know, Bitcoin was popping and Ripple was dying relative to Bitcoin. The weekly close was about 1,500 sats and it wicked down to, am I reading correctly? It wicked to zero, basically. Like, it wicked to 30. Something must have happened back then. Some kind of liquidity failure on Binance. But 50...
Just crypto things, yeah. But
1,500 sats was really the bottom before it mooned, and that could be interesting too. Like if it does capitulate down and makes a big move down to 1,500 or 1,000 sats, like maybe you could catch that rebound if they really wanted to. But yeah, certainly I've got 2,500. I had it on my chart from last August, and we're still playing with it. So that's disgusting.
Yeah, so that's Ripple. But did you know that the Monero USD pair hit $25 on that drop?
No, I did not.
And do you know what it's at right now?
No.
50. It's up 50% from the lows. 100% from the lows.
Yeah.
It's 2x from the lows.
That's crazy. Yeah, XMR USD.
Hashtag all season.
On Kraken. Yep, on Kraken it did. It hit about $26. That's amazing. I remember looking at, I really liked the fundamentals of Monero, and I never had it really in early 2017 or anything. But I was stunned that it was $11 in January 2017, and then it peaked over $400. And I always thought, like, that's incredible. Like, someone held that that whole time. Lo and behold, back to 25. So only another 50% down move to get back to 11. But I still kind of like the fundamentals of Monero. It did catch the weekly close at 38, which was also its 2018 low. I still like Monero. I don't know why I like Monero. Like, I think it's scary in some ways on its own, but it has a use case. Like, it is private, right?
Yeah.
On a weekly Monero's on a great. Weekly basis, $45 is kind of its flip swing failure pattern type of situation. But I don't really care about it relative to the dollar. If I look at it relative to Bitcoin, it's got this weird
bullish divergence is what you're about to say.
I was going to say like a broadening wedge. Like, it's making higher highs, but it's making like equal lows. It's a very strange looking pattern, like a almost like a megaphone at the bottom of a huge downslope. Mm-hmm. It's very, very weird, but I do think it is still interesting. But it's hard for me to believe Monero is going to do anything too crazy on the Bitcoin pair.
Because the Illuminati are buying, that's why.
Yeah, the drug dealers need to know. They need to know the value of Monero so they know how to price it.
There you go.
All right.
Anyway, that's all I got.
Y'all go read Josh's stuff, and thanks for being here. I hope everybody is surviving and doing okay. And scary times out there. If you go in public places, wear a mask. How about that?
There you go. Advice of the year, right there.
It's not about protecting you. It's about protecting other people. All right. Go to ledgerstatus.com to check out this podcast and more. Give us a rating on iTunes or a review. Leave us a review. We love reviews, but only if they're 5 stars. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you next time. Monuments crumble in the blink of an eye. The easy river has just run dry. In a house of cards.